right then. Slurpy, slurpy. First coffee of the day. And it's not my typical coffee. I like a good flat white, being the good Australian I am and the little heart of a hipster. But I am having a Turkish coffee today, made for me by a Serbian woman who works in the office with us now. Don't you love that? Like, the cultural exchange that happens in Europe. That's something. I mean, I had Turkish coffee before. I had Turkish coffee when I was back in Australia. My auntie Maria, so she has Serbian and Croatian roots. Shout out to Auntie Maria. Love you. Her mum introduced me to Turkish coffee. And I remember for the first time how much I loved it. Especially because she always put sugar in it, which I loved. And because I used to drink my coffee sweet. Fun fact about me that you didn't need to know. Anyway, I love that, you know. And Turkish coffee being made by a Serbian woman in Europe, in Vienna. Meanwhile, the world's trying, like a bunch of the world's countries are trying to close themselves up, put tariffs on everything and stop people studying in countries and shit. You know who I'm talking about. Yes, you, Mr. Trump. You've been a bad boy. Anyway, I think we should just open everything. Everything works better when there's that cultural exchange. They even knew that years and years ago. You know, since the Silk Route's been around, they've understood the benefits of cultural exchange that happens when things are open. And we're not trying to say, this is my land. You know, you stay on the other side of that border. It's just a fucked mindset, in my opinion. But that's coming from a guy that, you know, has traveled most of his life, most of his 20s, and lives in a country that's not his own. And I enjoy all the benefits of being an immigrant in a country that's not mine. And speaking of that, you may remember that I wrote a little book with Gabriel all about that, where he was the insider's perspective on, as we looked for as it says on the cover, we searched for the soul of Austria. Didn't find it. Didn't really look hard enough, to be honest. We just sat down and took the piss out of most of the things that are uniquely Austrian in a very loving way, right? But I was the outsider's perspective, and I wrote about the things that I found very peculiar, but the things I love that are peculiar about this country. So the kind of, you know, when you first start dating somebody and you notice their nuances and their idiosyncrasies and what makes them special, you know, and we wrote about that. Gabriel's not here today. He's a busy boy. He's working his ass off. I tell you, since he became 30 under 30 journalist of the year, he's changed. He's fucking changed. He's not the same guy. He started wearing polo shirts and having a pencil behind his ear. No, not polo shirts. What would a journalist wear? Oh, they would wear those suspenders, you know, like these old school journalists. He's always got his feet up on his desk, yelling into an analog phone, even though the analog phone is not connected because there are no connections anywhere anymore for analog phones. Look, I'm going to read you a couple of chapters today. One of them didn't make it into the final cut of the book because everybody, like we got a lot of messages after I read my last one where they said they love that there are chapters that we're throwing out there that weren't in there in the final book. And the other one is I'm Landes alles anders. So my experiences in the countryside of Austria, because obviously, as it's often said by those living outside of Vienna, Austria is not just Vienna, and that's often forgotten. So I wrote a chapter all about that. But anyway, the first one, first chapter I'm going to read you is Tracht, Lederhosen und Dirndl. It's not easy to say. Two things puzzle me in Austria. Naja, maybe more. But for now, let's go with two. Firstly, the fact that nobody wants you to bring up the war, but they're always working Hitler or the Nazis into some quietly said jokes amongst trusted friend circles. Just like Gabriel, He has as many Hitler jokes as he does incest jokes. And sometimes it's a Nazi incest joke. He's obsessed. Secondly, Austria is one of the only countries in the world where it is socially acceptable to wear never washed leather pants outside of a sadomaso party. But both of these things are what I genuinely love about this disturbed country. And I really mean the word disturbing country. I mean, you guys have a thing like a Jurifetz. What the actual fuck? Plus, one of the most beloved Austropop stars wrote a song about it. After Googling this, you quickly realize this is apparently quite the valued item of Austrian Kulturgut. No idea what it is? Well, in the words of the legendary dancer, das ist ein Tuchel, bitte sehr, was man nimmt da... Oh man, this is difficult for me. Was man nimmt, macht dem Geschlechtsverkehr. Man sollte es also nicht benutzen zum Schuhe oder Fensterputzen. I just realized what that said. Zum Schuhe oder Fensterputzen. Man hat's halt liegen, griffbereit, unterm Bett ist wieder an der Zeit. Okay, so this is, for those that still don't know what it is, this is not in the book. I didn't write this part. It's literally a cloth of some kind that is specifically made to clean up sperm after, you know. Yeah, the Austrians are one special group of people. I remember when so Gabriel explained this to me. And then for some reason we were talking in the car and the topic came up again and his mum was in the car. And he asked his mom what it is. And this is such a cultural, I don't know if it's a cultural clash. It's just like a Gabriel clash. Like his family talk about everything. My family would never talk about a sperm rag. And his mom was like, I never understood what they're for. Why don't you just use Kleenex? Anyway, continuing with the book. Okay, maybe it's unfair to say Austria is a disturbing country. Maybe the fact that the Jurifetzen exists here is just another example of how uber practical people are here. The Lederhosen is an item out of the Tracht wardrobe that also has a practical slant to it. According to several reports from our Austrian friends, most guys never wash theirs and nobody notices. Do you think Kaiser Franz Josef washed his Lederhosen after a hunt? The leather of the Lederhosen seems to absorb whatever is thrown at it. Beer, sweat, Jurifetzen juice. The Lederhosen simply swallows it all until it all becomes part and one with the material. Every Lederhosen has a history, buried and recorded in its leather. Like you can tell the history of a tree when you cut it down and read the trunk rings. A lot can be read into the adventures somebody has had while wearing their Lederhosen when you cut them open. Okay, maybe I'm bullshitting on that part, but also like Gabriel's Opa, some people just wear them every day of their lives. From wedding to work settings, they're an outfit that nobody looks twice at in Austria. Well, except the Viennese, who don't commonly wear them, and a naive Ausländer like me. And then there's the Dirndl, a dress that has been engineered to look flattering on everybody who wears one. Yes, I've tried one on, and it looks absolutely fabulous. When people buy into the whole Tracht deal and wear the complete outfit, the Dirndl, the blouse, the apron, and the Lederhosen, the red and white shirt, the high socks, and brown shoes, everybody actually looks sexy somehow in a weird cosplay kind of way. Yep, I'm calling it. For me, even though this has all of us dressing up in some fucked up conservative kind of male and female gender role defined peasant farmer dress-up party, they are undeniably sexy outfits. The eroticism lies in the restraint in the outfit. On the Dirndl, there's even an insider knot language that tells you if the person wearing the dress is single or not, depending on where the knot is. It speaks of Austria's relationship to eroticism. It's a country that has sweet little alpine girls and boys on their white curtains in the countryside, but these are exactly the curtains that are drawn when it's wild, kinky playtime. That the whole world seems to imagine that Austrians have, thanks to the worldwide fetish for German porn. I know you're not Germans, Austria, but the rest of the world doesn't. Coming from a country where the only kind of traditional clothing we have is flip-flops, boardies, and bikinis, I find tracht to be a novelty. I know for many, it is part of their tradition that they're very proud of. And for others, it's the symbol of some kind of conservative nationalism. I think the tracht only feels like that as some bad characters have hijacked the outfit as their uniform. Plus, I feel anything that can be identified as Austria pride feels icky for some Austrians. That must be difficult. I'm often wearing my thongs to feel my Australian roots now and again. Actually, my ideal outfit at a dress-up party is lederhosen with thongs. It really confuses the Americans. Speaking of confused Americans in Austria, I wonder how much money is made out of those "There are no kangaroos in Austria" t-shirts hanging in every souvenir shop in Salzburg and Vienna. You know the ones that hang next to some plastic made-in-China lederhosen board shorts or an apron with a dental on it. I can just imagine the people in the Chinese factory where such kitschy crap is made. It's probably the same factory where the recent hipsterized versions of the tracht are made. With a steady comeback in popularity of tracht in recent years, there's been many fluorescent pink and purple fake lederhosen and dandel made. All of those Chinese factory workers would be fair to be asking themselves, Jesus, who wears all these kinds of things? The Austrians, China. The Austrians. Plus the odd Australian tourist that wears it for Oktoberfest. Or those who want to roleplay a German pawn for their partner. That didn't make it into the book because Gabriel wrote about tracht and he wrote about his relationship to it, which was much more interesting as an Austrian. He wrote about how he actually loves the tracht and he grew up with his grandpa wearing it all the time, but he was like scared and hesitant to wear it in his bobo hipster circle. Okay, the next chapter I'm going to read you is called Am Land ist alles anders. I love the Austrian countryside. I can't get out there enough. It's not far from Vienna. That's the cool thing that you can be in. You know, I'm used to, you know, the closest city being 8-hour drive away. But here you can drive out to the countryside and everything is close in Austria. The benefits of being small. Okay, so this one is called Am Land ist alles anders. Holy hell, I'm going to throw up if I have one more. Woohoo! Bang, 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 bang. Zam, 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 Prost! I flick the Klopfer cap from my nose and plonk my body on the bar. I have no idea how many Jägermeisters I've drunk by now, but I know it's led to me no longer being able to stand on my own. Another beer lands in my hand. Of course, it's Austria. Another arm goes around me from a guy wearing socks pulled up to his knees. A green felt-brimmed hat and leather pants who yells in my ears, Es trinkt der Mensch, es sauft das Pferd, heute ist es umgekehrt. And now I'm dancing. Well, stumbling. Until I'm not. Turns out that I couldn't stand up on my own once the sweet tuba-playing band member from a little town near Amstetten removed his supporting arm from around me. I wake up several hours later and spend my morning downing a Reparaturseidel, which is a hair of the dog beer, while smacking golf balls into a farmer's field with a high-socked tuba player. Don't worry, no cows were hit. A Feuerwehrfest was my introduction to the Austrian countryside. So for those internationals out there, a Feuerwehrfest is literally a festival thrown by the local volunteer firework community. While living in Vienna, waking up most days to somebody's bare ass greeting you through the apartment window across from you, you often forget that a large proportion of people in this country wake to the sounds of cowbells and mountain streams. God knows why any of us live in the city when faced with that comparison. Well, there are reasons. One of those reasons is blaring out of the speakers of the Wirtshaus we're staying at in the Styrian countryside while researching and writing this book. It's Andreas Gabalier. I sing a lied für dich. Please don't, Andy. Please don't sing a song for me. Don't get me wrong, Andy. You're a superstar on this side of the Alps. You sell out stadiums, and they scream your name and for encores when you get up on stage in your leather pants, and your full-on get-up in which you've somehow managed to combine rockabilly with tracht. I mean, you sing tunes about somebody ironing their Dirndl gescheit, bügel dein Dirndl gescheit auf, and get 1.7 million views on YouTube for it. Millions of hits for a song about ironing? That's millions of hits for a song about ironing? Not sure how many of those views are for the music video more than the music, but it is definitely a video production worth checking out if you haven't already. You are one talented motherfucker, Andy. There are some similarities you can draw between visiting an Andreas Cobelier concert and visiting the Austrian countryside. There are lots of things outsiders won't understand. You often hear an accordion playing, and most people you meet are deeply affectionate about their country. Leather pants are commonplace, and there's dead animal skulls hanging from everywhere. I spent a lot of time in the small sleepy towns of Austria, and those towns that look like a damn Disney cartoon set. But I think if you're really going to understand it out there, you've got to live in one of the many tight-knit communities that make it up. That's why I recruited a New Zealander to help me. That's right, an Australian and a New Zealander are going to tell you what's what about the Austrian countryside. And the Kiwi is the TikTok influencer Austrian Kiwi, aka Jonathan Balkin, or Balchin. I don't know how to say his last name. Sorry, mate. If you don't know him, Johnny has become famous on social media for his highly relatable and highly funny videos about life in the Austrian countryside. Now hang on a minute. How does a New Zealander end up living amongst Salzburgers? Well, you've guessed it. Love. He came for the love of his Austrian partner and has stayed for the love of beer, Jause, and the pastoral mentality. And still his partner, of course. Johnny summarizes the people am Land as follows. A group of lovely, generous people, often living in their own bubble with a strong desire to enjoy life. That am Land bubble is looking different, but same in towns across the country. For example, take Tirl, where Gabriel and I visited while researching and writing this book. It's a standard template for any Austrian town, minus the few customizations. It's a town just over 2,000 people who live at least 14 kilometers apart from each other, on average. It has 5 Vereine, so clubs, a Billa, a football field, several beautiful but empty buildings that need a clean and a paint job, 1 castle ruins, 1 Trafik, 4 churches, 1 glorious industrial past, 1 swingers club on the fringe of the city, and it's surrounded by cows, and more cows staring into space. Everything is extremely neat and clean. The roads, the footpaths, the forests. Everything is impeccable. And it's really quiet there. Every day is a Sunday afternoon in Graz, said to me Georg Peter Mandl, aka influencer Georg's Gallery. You'll find more words from him in a chapter, Sex and Dating in Austria. And he's describing the country's second largest city. Just imagine what that means for the volume and liveliness of the towns. Oentel also has a Wirtshaus, and inside this Wirtshaus, we are served up a monster schnitzel after a bowl of Leberknödel soup. So that's a liver dumpling soup. Needless to say, after so much food, we are stuffed. That's why I was so surprised when our incredibly sweet waitress with an incredibly thick Styrian accent asked for forgiveness, because it had only been a Kleinigkeit. So she's pretty much saying that was just a snack. This wasn't a snack. This was a massive schnitzel that took over the plate. What do you mean? It was so much. I could lay down on the bench over there and fall asleep right now, Gabriel replied. Nagge. I swear she held on to the gee for half a minute. I love such expressions or sounds that the Austrians make. And there are so many. Ach so, your ear. Eklor, na yo, na na, no na, na no na net. Now repeat all of that 10 times quickly with a mouthful of spritzer. And if you stretch out a part of these sounds, it makes such a difference. you can really let people know you really, really mean it. For example, ach so translates to, ah, gotcha. While ach so translates to, ah, shit, I had no idea, now I getcha. Or your air translates as, yeah, of course. While your air is more like, hell yes, motherfucker. Or like the waitress demonstrated above with her gear. She really let Gabriel know that she really didn't believe him, and for countryside standards, this was a small-ass schnitzel. My favorite of these sounds that Austrians make is jein. This is pure poetry. It's yes and a no all wrapped up in one word. It is the yin and yang symbol of the German language and extremely useful for indecisive people. With such a word, you would never need to make a clear, resolute decision or answer a yes or a no question dishonestly in your life. Do you take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband? Jein. Do you ever pick your nose when nobody is watching? Jein. Do Austrians eat a lot in the countryside? Jein. Okay, it doesn't work with that last question because the answer would be a clear and enthusiastic yo-yo. I mean, a Bachhändel in Steiermark is served as half a deep fried chicken. Who needs to eat half a bird in one sitting? Not to mention there's always a side of potato salad with kebabskan öl drizzled all over the top. And the breakfast on a whole other level am Land. A spread for two can feed a mosh pit at an Andreas Gabalier concert. The big food spreads may be explained by the fact that a lot of free time in the Austrian countryside is spent simply sitting and chatting over a meal together. As Johnny explains, a lot of time is spent sitting with family, eating a meal together, and talking for 3 to 4 hours, mainly about others and what they're up to. People binge on gossip like Netflix series in the countryside. Gossip is also what makes sure the community gets along, as all the people in that community are always aware that whatever they do may be talked about by a family over a meal and beers at some point. It's very important to be a good neighbor out here. You invite people to your wedding even if you don't know them that well. If you bump into somebody, you invite them in for a beer. It's important to look neighborly in the community, explains Johnny. Meanwhile, the only time I care about what my neighbor is doing in Vienna is when I can hear them having sex and bash on the wall to signal for them to keep it down. That means they're probably not going to invite me over for a beer either. Plus, I'm surely not getting invited to their wedding, nor would I want to. Anybody that makes an orgasm sound like a whimpering dying cat is definitely not going to know how to throw a quality party, right? Dorfratschen is one big part of life in the Austrian countryside, says Johnny. Johnny explained how, when he first moved there, a rumor swept around the community that a black guy had moved to town. I was amazed at how quickly this rumor spread, says Johnny. That it was specifically a black guy moving into town that made it such a gossip headline, even though Johnny is as white as an Austrian snowflake, also says a lot about how insulated the countryside is. A lot of people have said to me that Austrians are racist or that they discriminate. I'm not sure. But if they are, I would say it's because they don't ever see people from other ethnicities, so they're not exposed to it in the countryside. In New Zealand, I grew up in a multicultural society, so for me, I always knew everybody is equal. But here in the countryside of Austria, if somebody turns up in town that looks different, it creates a lot of chatter. And before you know it, somebody is making racist or discriminatory comments because they just don't know how to react to it, says Johnny. This awkwardness towards people that look different also extends to those who speak differently, like New Zealanders, the Viennese, or Germans, for example. When I meet people that speak thick dialect and they don't speak English and they don't want to speak Hochdeutsch, they don't want to speak to me, says Johnny. Well, that is until they've downed 5 or 6 beers. Then they'll speak English to me because Hochdeutsch is just a disgusting language for them. People don't speak German in the countryside. They speak their dialect, which sometimes doesn't sound like German at all. Das haben wir schon immer so gemacht could be the slogan written on nearly every town welcome sign in Austria. What this means is, we've always done it that way, for those internationals listening. This is the one thing that really struck Johnny the most when he first arrived. I was surprised by how important it was to people to not only follow traditions, but to stick to doing things the way they've always been done. To change things would be very strange out here, says Johnny. An example of this is most people's relationship with religion. Every year, they'll smoke out the house, pray, bless the cows, and everything else in the house as they do every year. The other almost religious ritual followed every single week is that they always make schnitzel or Schweinsbraten on Sundays. It's a special day, says Johnny. While living am Land sounds a lot like listening to some kind of church hymn, blast music, Austropop fusion remix track on repeat, the Sunday schnitzel is one religion I could get behind. This brand of keeping things the same and predictable goes well with the pastoral mentality that can be found out in these parts of the country. Both I and Johnny love this part about Austrians. I've even found myself using pastoral when speaking English. I love it so much, admits Johnny. Pastoral is what made me feel most at home when I first arrived in Austria. Back home in Australia, we say, no worries, more often a day than there are actually things to worry about in the world, and there is a lot of things to worry about. So when I moved here, I simply swapped out no worries for pastoral and seamlessly carried on the long tradition of not worrying. I'm no expert on traditions or such things, but here's my theory. People cling tight to their traditions until their knuckles go white, as it's an attempt to freeze time, to stop the rapid change shaking the rest of the world, reaching their beautiful little town and their lives. Traditions feel safe, predictable, like a hug from your childhood. Who can blame people for not wanting to cling to that? A lot of things are done in the countryside because your parents did it. Maybe because your parents' life looked so damn good, or because there's nothing else to do. Like drinking, for example. A tradition that's always been at the core of Austrian culture, am Land, passed down from one father to his son, and he passes it on to his son. It's normal to drink 12 beers on one night at the pub. Heck, it's normal for a 12-year-old to drink 12 beers at the pub, and then even drive home after. The most incredible displays of drinking I've ever seen have been at Austrian countryside weddings. These have also been the most fun weddings I've ever been to. Every wedding am Land comes with a plot twist. One minute it's super serious with a couple declaring their sacred love for each other in a church, and then all of a sudden, strangers are packed into a Stube, so like a little room where the people eat and drink wine mostly, linking arms, together dancing on tables and chairs, declaring their love for each other while drinking liters and liters of wine at record speed. Johnny describes the tradition of a wedding Brautstillen perfectly. The Brautstillen starts and the whole vibe goes from somber and serious to absolutely insane. They steal the bride, and when the groom finds her, people start drinking really, really fast. I got given the task as a groomsman to continuously fill up all the glasses. They told me, if all glasses aren't filled to the max all the time, you're not doing your job right. The function of the Brautstillen at a wedding is like somebody flicking a switch and escalating a party at hyperspeed. And that party vibe doesn't end until goulash is served at 2 a.m, which is also another nice touch at an Austrian countryside wedding. The majority of Austria is serene. 50 shades of green, gorgeous countryside. 70 to 80% of this small country is rural, to be exact. I mean, hell. A lot of people say Wien is ein Dorf, which would imply we should simply throw that into the rural definition too. It sure does behave like a Dorf sometimes. A Dorf is a town, for those that are wondering. Most people you meet living in Vienna have grown up am Land. They tell you stories about playing in the woods and fields as kids, and not returning for an entire day until dinner time. I often think of these stories as I watch my kids chase a plastic bag being pushed around by the Vienna wind in front of a villa. When I take my city kids out to the forest, they react like city dogs. They hesitate at first, not wanting to get out of the car, unsure of what to do with all that open green space. When we start walking into the forest, they ask if we can stop at a cafe for a baby chino and a kipfel. Sooner or later, the smell of pine and fresh forest air intoxicates them and awakens their primal selves, and they run off and pee in the woods or howl at the moon or something. And coming from Australia, it still amazes me that you can do all of this without the fear of some lethal little creature biting them on the ass. This country is truly heaven on earth. Whenever I'm out in the forests and mountains, I'm always thinking about how glorious it must have been growing up out here. Until you hit puberty, that is. So yes, in Austria, am Land is alles anders. And yes, as they say, Wien is anders. Austria, in general, is alles anders when comparing it to the rest of the world. And if you'd ask a New Zealander or an Australian living in amongst it all if they enjoy it, they'd no doubt answer, your ear, pastor. That's the chapter. If you enjoyed it, go buy the book. Like, it's not much. I think it's not even 20 bucks, right? You can go get it in any bookstore. So Talia is a good bet that you'll find it there. Or you can order online on Amazon, you know? If you're not into supporting local businesses, fuck that. Convenience, go to the convenience, right? All these local businesses, what makes them fucking angelic in our eyes, right? Just joking, I know I'm making a few people angry there. Anyway, that was it for this episode. Next week, we're back together. Gabriel and I are actually doing a hike in the mountains in Steiermark, and we're going to be recording up there live to you. So very much looking forward to that. Otherwise, until next week, bussi, and no matter how bad you've got it, according to the Viennese, they've got it worse. Bussi. Papa.
The Worst Guide to Living in Austria is a Worst Agency production, hosted by Jacob Moss and Gabriel Schaffler. It's dropped every Monday and available everywhere you get your podcasts.